It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Here comes the pitch to Cal. He swings and shoots this deep out to right field. Does he strike again? Springer is watching. It is gone. Who else? Cal Raleigh invades Toronto again. It's a go-ahead 10th inning, two-run home run. And the Mariners are in front, 3-1 in extras.
Yeah, another big moment for Cal Raleigh at Rogers Center. A home run and extras. Mariners grabbed the finale against the Blue Jays yesterday in Toronto. A game they really wanted to get before returning home, and a game they got against Toronto. So we're going to talk about that a little bit and then get you ready for the Cubs series coming up. Starting tonight, three-game series Chicago, three-game series the Cincinnati Reds. Then the Mariners hit the road again. It's going to be Colorado and Texas after that on the road. We're also going to talk to Matt Pierpont in this one, pitching coordinator for the Mariners. Really interesting conversation I think you'll enjoy. So that's going to come up in a few minutes. First, let's celebrate a little Cal Raleigh, who just continues to dominate the Toronto Blue Jays. And, of course, a lot of the conversation surrounding John Snyder's, the Blue Jays manager, comments about Cal Raleigh. Here was Cal Raleigh after the game yesterday.
Yeah, we know he's a sinker baller, and figure he's going to try to get a ground ball to the pool side. So really trying to stay on the ball. It's just trying to move the runner, and luckily he got the barrel out there. And, like I said, just trying to do a job, and, ended up catching a little out front and went out.
Cal, was it a properly executed pitch?
I mean, they're all properly executed until somebody hits them out, right? So, I mean, I tell pitchers that all the time. Hitters get paid too. So, it's just part of the game, and it's just something where I was looking for it.
Hasn't been the road trip you guys were looking for, but how much nicer is it to fly back across the continent with a win like this under your belt?
Yeah, it's huge. Logan, he was great. He was awesome. Took us all the way into the eighth. Really only made one mistake all day. So he was great. He was efficient. He was filling it up. He was expanding when he had to, and he did a great job.
Do you look forward to series in Toronto? It seems like you always have big hits here.
Yeah, I do. I like coming here. I like playing. It's good memories here. It's, going all the way back to 22, and it seems like we always play. There's always close games. There are always extra innings, and there's always a little extra motivation when, you look over on that sideline. So,
I was going to say, I'm sure you don't, write it in your half, but I'm sure you heard what the comments from Snyder last year about if you execute a pitch, he can get you out. I mean, you're right, right?
Yeah, I know a lot of guys have beef with him in the league, so, his comments aren't surprising, and, I don't really have much to say. If you don't have anything nice, don't say it at all, I guess, if you don't want it to come back on you. So, he's had a lot of beef with people in the league, and he kind of did it to himself, so.
How good was Logan's slider today, and how far has that pitch come since he first started trying to throw it and master it?
Yeah, he was great today, Kind of didn't have the splitter going like he did last outing, but he leaned a little more on the slider today. And it's kind of the luxury of having all the kind of different pitches that he has. He can always kind of lean on one if he needs to and one's not working. So it's come a long way. He's worked really hard on it, as far as messing with shapes, locations, and he's kind of found something that he likes a lot and kind of been right in his happy zone. So.
Yeah, Logan, in a situation like this, not to make too much of it, but it would be good to go home with a win. You guys need to get things turned around. You need a stopper. What do you see from him today?
He was great. Like I said, we needed that today. It was huge. We didn't come out swinging it too hot today. You say it was pretty good. And, we needed that kind of step up from a guy like that in the clubhouse. And he came up big for us. And, that's what we needed, especially after, Louis and George were very unlike themselves the first two games. So. It was huge for us, and I think he had a chip on his shoulder too. He hasn't pitched great in Toronto or against the Blue Jays in years past. I feel like they always just got him with one big inning, so for him to go out and do that today was huge.
What'd you see on the Polanco catch?
I honestly didn't even panic. I thought he had it the whole way. It carried a little more than I thought towards the end, but I was kind of like running off the field. So I thought he had it the whole way. I guess it was a little closer than I thought. So
a little fun back and forth as Cal Raleigh gets the last laugh and the Mariners grab the win over the Blue Jays. Scott Servais certainly happy with that one.
What an awesome outing by Logan Gilbert today. It's exactly what we needed, but you're talking about executing pitches and not backing off, staying in controlling counts, all the things that we preach about on the pitching side. He did it today, about as good as you can do. And obviously made just the one mistake to Vlad. But other than that, I thought it was just an outstanding outing. We couldn't ask for any more. Super efficient, and to get that deep in the game was just awesome to see. He's pitching. He's throwing the ball great. And the struggles we've had throughout this road trip, to see him step up like that today to end it on a positive note, it's big for our team. I know it's early in the season, but it's really big for our club. And you know, putting an inning together like that in the 10th inning was great. Big hits. That's what we're capable of doing. But, you know, again, Cal goes up there not trying to do too much, you know, off Miza. I think just trying to move the runner, hit the ball hard the other way, and he did hit it hard. Again, this ballpark, really against the Blue Jays, Cal Raleigh has been fantastic. I don't know what the career numbers look like, but there's a bunch of home runs in there. So not a ton offensively. I thought Kikuchi was really good early on. He's throwing the ball extremely well. But, you know, guys chipping in. Demo doing what he's doing, getting on base, creating opportunity. JP with a knock to drive him in. And then it was just kind of hold on, and hopefully we could bust open late. So, again, frustrating road trip. Really proud of the guys today. We showed up, great energy today. Everybody's good to go. And we found a way to get it done. So day off tomorrow, and then we'll get back at it at home.
And, of course, you can't talk about the game yesterday without talking about Logan Gilbert, who was just sensational yesterday for the Mariners. One mistake to Vlad, that was it. But outside of that, Logan Gilbert was sensational yesterday against the Blue Jays. And a start they really needed. It's something that Aaron Goldsmith and I have been talking about with the Mariners. You know, with the slow start for the Mariners this year, a lot of the emphasis has been on the offense. And we know the offense has struggled. But the rotation at times has really struggled. In fact, here's some of what we've been talking about in the recent days.
The magnifying lens has been focused on the lineup, and I understand that. Mariners have not gotten off to a strong start offensively by and large. However, all of that ire has kind of blinded us from a problem that is the Mariners' greatest strength, and that is the pitching has not been great. Has the pitching been good? I don't know if it's been like holistically good. I mean, the rotation, what do you think?
Yeah, so let's take this in two parts, because I think the bullpen has done a good job, especially given the circumstances. So let's push them to the side. Like, they're missing two of their biggest guys, and I think they've had some other guys step forward and pitch pretty well.
They're missing two huge guys, and now they just lost another two guys.
Yeah.
Right?
And so overall, I would say the bullpen has pitched well, considering the circumstances. I would say the rotation has not pitched up to expectations. And the expectations are high, because the rotation's really good. And you have a bunch of all-star slash Cy Young contending types in the rotation. And it's the backbone of this team. That's the thing. The Mariners are going nowhere unless the rotation pitches well. That's just fact. It is a strength of this team. And they have not, the rotation has not pitched well, especially in the last turn. You look at the last six starts and it's a lot of runs. It's 26 runs in 30 innings. It's 47 hits in 30 innings. That's a lot of production on the other side. And that's with a Miller start in there who didn't give up a run in seven innings. So it kind of gives you an idea of what has happened here in the recent stretch.
Yeah, Kirby had the worst start of his career in terms of runs allowed the last time he was on the mound. And Castillo is leading the majors in hits allowed. And even Scott talked about it after the game last night. And now it's kind of a fun debate, right? You can actually debate when who is the best starting pitcher when they are on. Like, it could be Kirby, could be Gilbert, could be Castillo. But nevertheless, Castillo is your big cheese.
Yes.
As Bryce Miller would say. Yeah. And as Scott pointed out last night, and I don't think you can dispute this, anyone, like when your top guy is very hittable and not sharp, that's a tough thing to try to replace. Now, the Mariners are in the best position of maybe any team because of the depth in the rotation, as you were saying. But it hasn't been there in terms of the performance. Mm-hmm. I think my takeaway here, and I agree with everything you said when looking at the bullpen and the rotation, do we think the Mariners' rotation will be okay?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
100% yes.
Yeah.
Like, this is me saying what has happened so far with also acknowledging this is not what's going to take place moving forward.
Right. So if we think the rotation will be okay, I think it's fair to believe right now that the lineup will be okay. Now, the just facts are the ceiling for the rotation is higher than the ceiling for the lineup.
That's right.
Because it could be the best rotation of baseball if they all perform to their expectations. If the lineup all performs to their expectations, it's a really good lineup. It's not the best lineup in baseball.
Right.
You know? I mean, and that's okay, because the whole point is the recipe here to win 90-some games, right, and mm-hmm. win a division is you have a dominant pitching staff anchored in particular by the rotation and an above-average lineup.
Yeah, and then I look at games, game one against the Blue Jays with Berríos on the mound, right? That's a game where, realistically, you need Castillo to go toe-to-toe, mm-hmm. I think, yes. with Berríos. I mean, I think that's a realistic way to look at that game. Berríos is really, really good, and he pitched really well. And you get down by four, that's a big ask for the offense to come through with five runs against the guy.
For any lineup, it's difficult.
Yes, it's a big ask. So my expectations are really high for this Mariners rotation.
And I think they should be.
Yes, I think it is fine to have high expectations for the rotation. And I think it's also fine when they're not living up to those expectations to say it.
Yeah, because they know it.
Yes. Everyone knows it. Yes.
And you look at the context of it, there are things that happen early in a baseball season where you say, well, that's not going to last. Good or bad, that goes both ways. There's also things that happen early in the season where it, I think, is a red flag for big problems moving forward. So let's continue this starting rotation conversation with the Mariners. And when you compare the Mariners' starting rotation ERA, you know, the Rockies have the worst starting rotation ERA in baseball, 6.61 so far this season. And when you look at the Rockies' rotation, expectations coming in, that to me is a red flag that there are going to continue to be problems with the rotation the rest of the way. Nationals, second worst ERA in baseball with their rotation, 6.53. Again, it's a red flag situation for me. The third worst rotation ERA in baseball, the Mariners, 5.83. And that's one I look at where I look at the pitchers in the rotation and I say that is not going to last. That rotation is too good. And the Blue Jays have the ninth worst rotation ERA in baseball. I don't think that's going to last either. The Blue Jays had one of the best rotations in baseball last year. And it's just one of those things that happen early in seasons. Now, things can also change early in a season where you may have to adjust expectations. Like the Astros are kind of in that weird spot. They have the seventh worst rotation ERA in baseball. And if they've been without Verlander, what's he going to be like when he comes back? Hunter Brown has gotten knocked around in his first couple starts with the expectations that he would take a step forward this year. What's that going to look like? Valdez goes to the IL. How long will he be there? So there are some questions that kind of can change expectations as time goes along, but I expect the Astros overall to be better in the rotation as well as we move through. Now, we can be wrong on things, of course, but I think that comes into play when you're talking about the Mariners, the rotation, expectations, and how that connects to the offense. So I think what Mariner fans are hoping for is we see more of what we saw in Toronto against the Blue Jays in that final game. Really good day offensively, really good inning offensively, but it was certainly enough. And, of course, the pitching was dynamite in that game too. The Cubs, it's going to be an interesting series against Chicago. Off to a pretty good start so far this year. They're coming in off an off day yesterday. 7-5 so far this season. Rotation has been a pretty big strength for them as well, despite losing Justin Steele. He hurt his hamstring in his first outing. Maybe not a household name at this point, but Justin Steele was excellent last year for Chicago. Really good lefty. He's going to be on the shelf for about a month. So that's a big loss for the Cubs. They haven't necessarily felt that yet. but he'll be missed. The three the Mariners will face, Javier Assad, who's pitched two games so far this season, 12 strikeouts in 11 innings, a 1.64. He's pitched well. They'll face Jordan Wicks, an ERA a touch over four. He struck out 13 in 8 2/3 so far this season. And Shota Imanaga, who's off to a great start after coming over from Japan, the 30-year-old, has not given up a run in two starts so far this year. 12 strikeouts, no walks in 10 innings. So he's been really good as well. Offensively, Bellinger off to a slow start this year, but Cubs certainly pack some punch with Bellinger and Suzuki and Dansby Swanson. So this should be a very interesting three-game series. I think we're all excited to see Bryce Miller take the mound tonight, coming off of an excellent start last time out. You know, it's been a struggle up until Logan Gilbert last time, really a turn and a half through the rotation, with the exception of Bryce Miller, who was just dynamite last time out. And what was really exciting against the Brewers was just how he handled lefties. Lefties did not have a hit 0 for 13 in that game against him. He used the splitter a lot against lefties. And we talked about that coming into the season, both with Miller and Wu. The key would be, what could they do against lefties? They both dominated righties. They both had heavy splits, though. The lefties got to both of them to varying degrees, different degrees. But looks like Miller has found a couple of weapons to negate that a little bit. And if he can be just similar to where he was against righties last year and take a little bite out of what lefties did against him last year, that potentially is a big step forward. So I'm pretty excited to see what Bryce Miller does tonight. Bryce Miller, of course, a product of this Mariners system and a big part of all the success we have seen with guys coming up. Matt Pierpont, who is Seattle Mariners pitching coordinator. Aaron Goldsmith and I had a chance to sit down with Matt.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Matt, it's such a treat to actually sit down and talk with you. There are certain names in the Mariners organization that just kind of get floated around by players and members within baseball operations, and they almost seem like mythical creatures. And so this is our confirmation that Matt Pierpont is a real person. So first of all, thank you for the confirmation.
Of course. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hey, the Mariners are doing so many things so incredibly well on the pitching side, and it does start in the minor leagues, as we've seen. If you were to sum up for someone in just a few sentences what it is the Mariners preach and teach to their young pitchers, what would you say?
I think if you look top to bottom, like, the biggest thing that we talk about is dominating the zone. But I think what we do well as an org is clarity and simplicity for players. So many players just don't know what they do well. They don't know what works at the major league level. And I think when you just tell somebody the truth, as simple as that, and it sounds like a cop-out answer, but when you tell somebody the truth, you empower them to be able to make decisions to chase after that truth. And so the better we can be at simplifying things and telling somebody what's good or bad, I've been amazed at how players can make strides and get better when they just know, like, this is good, this is bad, and you don't do anything else. But at the end of the day, like, what we do is just dominating the strike zone, and it's just about getting into good counts, trusting your stuff, attacking hitters, and really that's it.
How did you get here philosophy-wise? Because you're someone that pitched in college, you pitched in the minors up to AAA. What led you to hear philosophy-wise?
Yeah, I think, my whole dream was always to play Major League Baseball. I was blessed to get a chance to be in professional baseball and play for a long time with the Rockies, where I met Andy, where I met Trent Blank, where I met Ken Roberts, but was kind of on the fence after COVID about playing. Went home one day after still training in January of 21, I think, and was like, told my wife, I was like, I think I'm ready to hang it up. Mm-hmm. Trent Blank called me like 2 hours later to interview for a job. So it just kind of like happened to be the Mariners. It wasn't like I was looking.
Trent had no idea that this was what was going on in your mind.
No, it was more of like a, hey, what are you still playing? Are you coaching? Are you this? Are you that? And I was like, it's funny that you ask. Like, I don't really know what I'm doing right now. So it just kind of honestly just fell into my lap. Having a good relationship with Trent from, we played together in 2014. And then I've always followed the Mariners since Andy came over. And saw all the success, and so I was always intrigued, and yeah, it's pretty much what one phone call, and then just kind of things happened.
Since you brought up Andy McKay a couple of times, now the Mariners' assistant general manager, was the farm director for so many years. Is Andy McKay the greatest hire in Mariners franchise history? Because the coaching tree that has come from Andy, I don't know how anyone could have known when he was initially hired by Jerry so many years ago to run the farm system that we would have this immense population of Andy McKay disciples take over as coaches and be so impactful. What is it about Andy's tutelage that has brought on so many people from the Mariners pitching coach Pete Woodworth down that has impacted this organization?
I think it's just... like, it's easy to – you talk to him one time, it's easy to see, like, his passion for baseball, his passion for people. And from the moment I met him, like, he just invested into everybody. And so there was always something different about him to me. He was in a different role with the Rockies when I met him. He was a mental skills coach, mental skills coordinator, one of those two. And I was a no-name relief pitcher in A ball that he would invite out to lunch and invest in and talk to, and he made a huge impact on my playing career. But I just watched how he cared about people, and it just, you're drawn to that. And he makes things simple. Like, he teaches everything that we do came from him in terms of truth telling and honesty and clarity. And you know, he's seen things done different ways, and he has a vision of how he thinks things should be done. And when you play through it on the different side and see how things could not be done or things could be done better, it makes you want to go and work for that person. And he empowers the people that work under him. He challenges them, and he really takes like their career growth and takes it on himself. So it's I'm blessed to be a part of this organization. And yeah, Andy's been great to a lot of people.
You've brought up Dominate the Zone.
Mm-hmm.
As a coaching staff, how do you keep that message from getting tired? Because it is so powerful, but it is hammered so relentlessly for so many years now. Obviously, it has impact, but I can see a player who's been in the org for some time, after a while, getting D the Z fatigue, right? How do you keep that impactful and yet keep it fresh?
Yeah, it's a really challenging thing to do, because as the person giving the message, we just talked about it this morning, like you feel like you're overdoing it. You feel like it's corny. You feel like you've done it a million times. You feel like you've said it 1,000 times, 1,000 different ways. But you just ultimately, at the end of the day, you have to know that players don't always hear the same message. Mm. Players aren't always ready to hear the message. And so you could say it to them a million different ways and they might not hear it, but the one time they might hear it a different way, and it might not come from you, but it might come from somebody else. And so if we can align on the coaches front, not just the pitching coaches, but everybody, and everybody's preaching the same message, like, you never know when that person is ready to hear the message. I think Gabe Spire is like a perfect person for that. Somebody who didn't have a ton of success and then came here and got like a very simple message, like, do this and this is why. And like, that was his moment, and he didn't need any other convincing. Like, it was right there, and he goes out and does it. for the rest of the players. Like, you don't know when that moment is going to be, and you don't know if you're the person who's going to give it. And so I think always having that in your mind, it helps you to just stay with it and find new ways to say the same thing.
Because that's the trick, right? It's the, we know you have the data, we know you have the message, but we don't know, like, how do you connect on communication? Like, how difficult is that?
Yeah, I think, like, ultimately what we talk about is, like, our people, our process. And if you invest in the people first, I think it makes it easier to then double down on the process.
Okay.
Because we care about the people. We make it very known to them that we do and that we will continue to do that. And we'll care about them as people. And we back that up as an organization, like, top to bottom. They hear the same message from Jerry that they hear from in the ACL. And so when everybody is continually focusing on the person, it allows you to kind of then make the process seem, you know, better to them, I guess.
What do you know now about pitching that you wish you would have known when you were in the minors? You were in the position with the guys you're working with now?
Yeah, I think just that simplicity, that clarity on, like, what is good and what is bad. And I think I wish I would have just, someone would have really sat me down and told me exactly where I was. I think most players are delusional, but, like, delusional in a good way. You have to be.
You have to be.
You have to be if you want to be one of the best in this game. And I definitely was. And I just didn't have, when you haven't been on the other side, you don't know all the things that go into level and assignment and getting chances and opportunities. For me, it was, like, just what was happening on the field. That was the only thing that I could do. But I think if I could go back, if I would have wanted anything else, it would have just been clarity from the moment I got into the org. And, like, what does it take to go forward? And I think that's what we do well. These are the things that we care about. These are the things that are within your control. Do these things. And it just gives a player ownership of their career, ownership of their path to the big leagues.
Matt Pierpont is our guest. He's the Mariners pitching coordinator. Matt, why don't you walk us through, typical day. I think we need to zoom out more than that. Like, what is your month like? Because you are talking to so many pitchers in so many different places. Once the season gets rolling, what's it like for you?
So in season?
In season, yes.
In season, when the season starts, you get like a couple days of like a breather, because spring training is a lot of just putting everything together, making sure that, you know, people are pitching, people are built up, people are ready, just covering everything. So you get a couple days to relax and kind of let the reins go and let the coaches go and do everything. But I'd say a typical day, once a season starts, is like wake up and probably around 8 or 9 in the morning is when we get all of our data, our information from the previous game. And so it's just looking over that, checking all the pitchers that threw and where they're at and how the games went. And then it's just kind of talking to the coaches if they need to talk. Like, if I'm not on a trip and I'm just here, it's just checking in, not daily, but weekly probably. And then, you know, once the game starts, just watch all the games and make sure I'm available if something happens with an injury or a pitch count or a coach needs something, just be available. And then watch the games, go to sleep, do the same thing the next day. And it's just checking in, making sure you guys are doing what they need to be doing, progressing the way they need to be progressing. And if a coach needs help or a player needs help, then might schedule a trip or do something like that. But it's definitely hands off during the season, and kind of we do a ton of continuing education and as a pitching group to make sure that we're all pushing in the right direction. And then when we're all together, getting everybody's player plans and going through all the players so that coaches are, you know, ready to go and do their job. So it's a lot more hands-on during spring training, but then once the season comes, it's like you did everything that you could and you just let them go and learn and work, both for the players and the coaches, and then just help however I can.
So you're based in Peoria during the season. How often do you go to the affiliates during the course of the year?
Yeah, so my wife and I just moved to Arizona this year. So this last year I was on the East Coast making all the trips, which was not the most fun with the time difference.
But yeah.
It's usually about half of every month. It's not anything set in stone. That's another great thing about Andy. It's like, do your job. It's not micromanaged. He's not going to ask questions about my trips or this or that. It's just take care of the things you need to take care of. And if they're not, then we'll have to answer some questions. But it's about every other week or something like that. Might take a 10-day trip and take, you know, a week or more at home, but pretty much half of every month about that.
We have seen so many Mariners pitchers who have come through the organization, come through the minors, change, evolve, develop at such a rapid rate once they even get to the big leagues, right? Like, look at Logan Gilbert.
Yeah.
Look at Logan Gilbert today versus when he debuted, and just flip on your head, different style pitcher. What is it in the minors that you emphasize the most? Let's take, like, starting pitchers in particular, where you know that they're going to continue to evolve. But, Logan, if you can do this or this and this, and you can't say dominate the zone, this will put you in the right lane to have continued success and development even once you get to the big leagues.
Yeah, I think – I love that you took that answer away from me. But I think it's two sides to it. There's a physical aspect where we – particularly for starting pitchers, like, you zoom out and you think more of skills rather than pitches. So if we can teach guys the skill of throwing hard and the skill of making the ball move in different ways, like, their arsenal is going to change as they go through minor league baseball and into the majors. Like, you see Logan, George, Bryce, Brian, Emerson, all of them, their arsenals are different. Like, they're throwing the same pitch types, but the how they move, the shapes of them are slightly different. And so if we can teach them the skill of making the ball move, we know that they're going to have to use it at some point. And so if you can challenge them when they're younger and get them used to being uncomfortable and doing hard things and trying new things, they're open to it when they need to be open to it. And so when they do get to the big leagues, if they need to make a tweak, it's not the first time they've ever done it. They've done it a bunch. And so they can, you know, we can make changes in season where other guys might be hesitant. Is there going to be a performance lapse? Are there other things we're not considering? But giving them the skill of making the baseball move early has shown, like, tons of rewards later. And then on the mental side, it's just the mental skills are embedded in everything that we do. And it even played into the physical thing that I just said of having the mental capacity to be able to struggle, to be able to do difficult things. Like, we do that with everything. And so it's not player development and mental skills. It's all together. And so how that has, and that comes from Andy as well, and how that is just embedded in everything that we do, I think it just sets our players up to have success, but to deal with failure, which you're going to deal with at some point.
I'm fascinated by teaching the skill of making the ball move, because I feel like there are pitchers like George Kirby that are naturally just can pick up the ball and do whatever you ask, right? Yeah. But I assume you can't, like, you couldn't teach Aaron to move the ball well, because look at him, it wouldn't go well. But what,
Matt, you and me after this, hour a day,
yeah, for sure,
for 5 years.
how do you go about teaching that skill?
I think a lot of people have a closed-off view of what certain pitchers are capable of doing. And I think that we've kind of, like, crushed that thought, that guys just can't do certain things. And I guess the easiest – have you ever seen a blitz ball? Like the – you've probably seen them online. It's like a – they play blitz ball. It's like a wiffle ball, but there's
holes in it.
And the ball goes all over. It's like I always use the metaphor of, like, if I went to a 12-year-old and I gave him a blitz ball – and I said, hey, I'm going to come back in a week. I need you to make this ball go left. And if you can make it go left, I'll give you $1 million. And I just left. I would bet you $1 million when I come back in a week, the thing's going to go left. And it's like, I'm not telling him how to do it, but I'm giving him a goal, and I'm letting him explore and figure it out. Like, we are literally working with the best athletes in the world that have that ability if we don't box them in to think certain ways. And so if you can just challenge him, don't give him the answer, like, make him struggle, make him figure it out himself, make him go watch somebody else. But at the end of the day, if I just said, like, ball has to do this, and I don't coach them anymore, I promise you when I come back in a week, the ball will do more of whatever I asked him to do. And so I think we view, like, viewing it as a skill and giving them the freedom to solve that problem however they want to, like, that is what allows us to kind of break down those barriers. And then, and it's fun, like, guys like doing that, and then you can go in and, like, refine that skill, because eventually you will, But like the big thing of just making the ball move in a certain way, like the guys will figure it out. Hmm.
You've just given me my third grade Little League coaching philosophy now.
Yes.
They want to practice. Guys, I need you to score a lot of runs. I'll be back next Tuesday. Yeah. Ice cream cones on me if you can do it.
It
will it work with third graders?
Not in that example.
But surprisingly.
Yeah, shockingly.
But if you look at, this is like a whole nother tangent, but like I hate watching Little League practice. Like I despise how, and I love the people that invest and give time and give back and coach. Like it's incredible. But they're coaching, I don't want to say old school, they're just coaching the way that they were coached. And there's so many different ways to go about it, and you can see there's a lot of people doing it well when you just look at like the skills that transfer. Like if you tell a kid to just, if you put a kid on a machine and it tells them how hard they hit the ball, and all you do is give them feedback of how hard they hit, and you do that consistently over 2 months, I bet you they start hitting the ball harder because they know that this is good and this is bad. And you can make that fun, and at the end of the day, like it's just about hitting the ball hard. And like George Kirby throws into a nine pocket in the offseason, and people will laugh at that. But like the nine pocket doesn't lie to George Kirby. Like if it's in the box, it's in the box. If it's not, it's not. Like if you did the same thing to a kid, it's just like for the next 6 weeks, we're going to track how often you can throw the ball into that box. And that's it. And then you find new and challenging, fun ways to make it harder for him to throw it in the box. Like he's going to get better at doing that. And we just, we put the thoughts of what we think baseball should be onto little kids, and we make it more challenging and we make it less fun for them. So I do think that it would work, not in like a broad sense of like, hey, score more runs, unless you have a super smart kid. I don't know, maybe. But in terms of the skill, like you can do it a lot of different ways and make kids love the game of baseball.
Matt Pierpont is our guest. He's the Mariners pitching coordinator. You mentioned earlier every day in the morning you look at, in season, you look at a sheet that has data on every pitcher in the org that pitched last night. Gary and I talk all the time, especially on pitching, it's true offensively as well, how there's not just one thing, right? You just can't look at ERA and say, oh, this guy's better than that guy, right? It's like this tapestry of information and numbers to determine success or failure. What are some of the first things that you look at on that sheet? And I realize some of them might be Mariners' internal proprietary things, right? But broadly, like, what are some of the first things you look at to indicate success or failure the night before?
Yeah, I think that most of what I look at is like an internal sheet. But the first thing I will look at is like 00s and 11s dominating the zone. You didn't take that answer away from me, so I used it. But definitely looking at that, just, and that's going to vary every single night. So it's not like, oh, he did this good, he did this bad. It's just like, is he trending in the right way? Does he know what he should be doing? But then we talk a lot about quality pitches. For us, it's just throwing our best shapes, our target shapes to our count specific strategic locations. And I'm really only looking at like how often are guys throwing pitches to where they should be throwing them. To me, that's like as process oriented as you can get. And it allows players to be like, to go one for one and play the game one pitch at a time. So I'm looking at how many quality pitches they throw. And then I'm just looking at like their velo and shapes, like how good is their stuff? Is it trending up? Is it trending down? Are we good? Do we need to make adjustments? But on like a daily basis, it's just, and I tell the players this all the time, like how many quality pitches can you throw? Major league average is around 55% for us in our system, and so it's, we compare everybody to a major leaguer. It's like, this is what you need to be doing. Are you doing those things? And so a combination of those things with some other cool stuff that our org has made for us.
When you say that an average big league pitcher throws a quality pitch 55% of the time, this is just based, you're basing it on the location of the pitch, and does the count have anything to do with that?
Yeah, count, okay. Batter handedness. So okay. every pitch type has a location and a certain count to a certain batter, a righty or a lefty, that like this pitch has success in these areas, basically. And so it's just like, how often are you throwing pitches to areas that have success in those counts? And that like the locations are fairly intuitive. Like if you're behind in the count, it's bad to throw it outside. of the strike zone. So how often are you in zone when you're behind? When you're ahead, when you have two strikes, it's bad to throw a pitch in the strike zone. So how often are you getting to quality locations outside? So it's nothing crazy in terms of like where those locations are, but how often are you doing those things?
We've mentioned some of the names. The system has graduated. Kirby and Logan, and go down the list. Who are some of the guys that you're really excited about in the system right now?
Man, a lot. It's crazy to think that because you look at our starting rotation, you look at some of the guys that we've sent on, and our scouting department has done an incredible job with the players that we've brought in. So the guys that are up there are extremely talented and fun, but it's like every year we just keep bringing in really, really good guys. I think a name that everybody's kind of talking about right now is Logan Evans, who we drafted last year out of Pitt, has made some huge strides in a lot of different ways and really has taken ownership of his career, and he's in a great spot. Super excited about him. I think Jeter, like to the other side of the spectrum, Jeter Martinez coming over for the first year from the DSL. He just turned 18 a month ago. Like, I can't believe that 18-year-olds can do the things that this kid can do. It's just, it blows me away. Brody Hopkins has been electric, just so fun to watch. And he went to Winthrop as well, my alma mater. So definitely, and he was a two-way in college. So he's kind of, it's cool to see him just come in like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. Just tell me what to do.
Classic Winthrop guy, yeah, right?
Exactly. Luckily, like, I could tell him. We could tell him what to do. And so to watch him just, like, grow and, like, the stuff is incredible. But he's learning and learning what it means to be a pitcher, learning what it means to be a professional. And Mikey Morales, I mean, it's like every single year this kid just keeps getting better and better and better. I just sat there and watched his bullpen. I'm like, this is so good for a kid that's 21 years. He would be a junior in college this year. And so he's like, he's been in the system, so you kind of forget about him, but he's like, he would be a junior, he would be drafted and coming out. Like, how good is this kid at throwing baseball? So there's so many. Ty Cummings coming out of Campbell last year, he's been unreal, and the list just keeps going on and on. So we got some good ones coming through. It's an exciting time.
You spent two different winters playing winter ball?
I did, yeah.
Do you have a great winter ball story?
Oof.
Anything just crazy happen?
Yeah, I guess my very first – there's a bunch, but we'll keep it. We'll keep it yeah, we'll keep it good. My very first game ever, I was playing for Escogido in 2017. And I was playing in the second half, and the first game that I was active, we were on the road at Aguilas, which is north, and now I'm forgetting of the city. But they hadn't lost a game. They'd lost one game at home all year. They were like the number one team at the time. And so I was told that it was going to be packed. What they didn't tell me is that it was going to be packed, but it was also like Vuvuzela night. And so they packed the entire place and gave out free Vuvuzelas, and our bullpen is down the left field line, and you sit right up against a fence, and the fence is 3 feet high, and so there's people right behind you just screaming at you and blowing Vuvuzelas in your ear. But eventually, like, a kid took my hat.
What?
I mean, they're just like, they're grabbing stuff, they're hitting you. Like,
did he take it off your head?
Took it off my head.
Did you get it back?
I did get it back. Okay. But eventually, somebody took something or somebody said something to somebody. And we had a few pitching coaches, a few bullpen coaches, and like bullpen catchers. So I won't specify who it was. But somebody who was working for the team got into it with a teenager or something who like stole something or hit somebody, and they're going at it, and I'm like, what did I sign up for?
This is your first game ever.
I don't even remember if we won or lost. I didn't pitch, but I was like, oh, I've never seen fans that were so emphatic, and like, they love the game of baseball over there. Like, it's just, it's different. It was the best experience of my playing career by far. If any player ever had an opportunity to do it, I would tell them to go do it. It changed my perspective on life and on baseball. It taught me so much, and I had an absolute blast. It is so much fun to go and play down there. But there's a lot of crazy things that happen down there.
Did it give you some empathy if you didn't have it built up yet for you being the fish out of water and being in another culture and with a language that I maybe you do speak, maybe you don't speak?
Speak it a lot better now. I always tried to learn whenever I was playing, but I remember that I got in at like 12:30 at night, so I got to my hotel late. I remember waking up and walking downstairs and going to breakfast and just not even thinking, and they started speaking to me in Spanish, and like I froze and I was like, I don't even know what to say, how to say it. Like, I just froze. And then you don't realize how difficult it is to be somewhere where like you just can't say what you want to say or you can't understand. It's so frustrating. But then to see, you know, it's not the same as being from here. There's you know, kids that are on the street, kids that are like living in shacks, and it's a different way of life. But the perspective it gives you, and I know that it means a lot to the players that I've gone there and played, that I would be willing to do that. And it allows me to kind of resonate and connect with the Latin players in a different way. So it was truly a blessing to get the opportunity to go there just to play. But the benefits that it has had on this side of it have been huge.
That's cool. Matt, this has been wonderful.
Yeah.
We're so glad that you had the time to share all this with us. You're somebody we've wanted to talk to for a long while now, so thank you so much.
Of course. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.